Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Do you consider yourself a nature lover? Or do you zero in on the animal life that pleases you and more or less ignore the rest, unless it gets in your way for some reason? Whether we like to admit it or not, most of us are guilty of prejudice when it comes to the natural world. Even rabid animal rights folks who accuse others of speciesism don't realize what blatant speciesists they may be themselves. Don't worry if you don't know exactly what the word speciesism means. Its meaning may depend on whom you ask. Some animal rights folks use it to describe an immoral animal species prejudice on a par with racism or sexism. At the same time, they personally may not hesitate to directly or indirectly kill mosquitoes, ticks, spiders, snakes, or members of any other species they fear. Others equate speciesism with human supremacy. They believe that humans possess rights, freedoms, and protections excluded from all other animals. I can't really take issue with this approach because all animal species share that view regarding the supremacy of their own species. We need only look at the extraordinary strategies they've evolved to fulfill their priorities to see evidence of this. Still a third group of people would dole out these advantages to only a few favored species. In this realm, certain non-human primates may have rights, but not cats or buffalo. At the same time, other people will elevate only dogs or cats, or even only their dog or cat, to this level and dismiss all other animals. However, even without all its different definitions to keep it company, speciesism doesn't live in a vacuum. Listen to a group of people discussing speciesism, and the word sentience is bound to pop up. And when it does, it brings its different definitions with it too. Eastern and more nature-based cultures define sentience as the capacity to perceive or experience sensations subjectively, to experience emotions, including pain and fear. All that possess sentience are worthy of our respect and care. Western definitions differentiate between thinking and sentience or feeling. Sentience is the ability to experience sensations. The term sensation takes us out of the metaphysical and philosophical realm and plants us firmly in biology. Sensations are those qualities that an individual can sense. They can see, hear, smell, taste, and feel. This broadens the sentient field considerably. This also would seem to include microscopic species like the single-celled animal called Tetrahymena. It has opiate receptors just like leeches and rats, among its other amazing physiology. When opiates latch onto those receptors, they block pain, slow respiration, and have a calming effect. Obviously, if little Tetrahymena possess these receptors, they need them. It's not as if there's a lot of extra space in a single cell for superfluous structures. Oh dear. That really does make ye old moral compass spin, doesn't it? But Tetrahymena speciesism aside, what if I told you that the overwhelming majority of us first world folks ignore the sentient species that make up the bulk of the Earth's biomass? A whopping 450 gigatons carbon of the 550 total compared to our own measly 0.06%. Surely our disregard for the needs of those other species elevates us to the flaming speciesist rank. Western societies placed all these species in a separate kingdom, the plant kingdom, and dismissed them as nothing at all like us or other animal species. So deeply entrenched was his bias that Charles Darwin never published his volumes that detailed years of plant studies that disproved this common belief. Although it greatly delayed our understanding of plant sentience, I can't blame Darwin for his reluctance to publish his material. People were having enough problems dealing with his work on the evolution of animals. Perceiving plants as part of the same continuum that included sentience would have precipitated a meltdown in the scientific community. Meanwhile, no doubt folks living off the land would wonder what all the fuss was about. Not unlike today. This brings us to two other words about which no ambiguity exists: homologs and analogs. Homologs are body structures from the same origin that perform the same function in different species. Analogs are structures that perform the same function in different species but arise from different origins. For example, the leg bones of dogs, cats, horses, and goats all arise from the same four-legged ancient ancestor. Consequently, these structures are homologs. On the other hand, bats and birds can both fly, but the structures that enable them to do so don't come from a shared ancestor. Consequently, their flight-related structures are analogous. However, the fact that they use different structures to achieve the same goal doesn't change the fundamental fact that they both can fly. Once you recognize this biological reality, you realize that a living being that spends its entire life literally rooted in one position will need to accomplish the same basic goals we animals do in a different way in order to survive. That means evolving strategies that also enable plants to establish and protect their territories, find food and water, mate and reproduce, and ensure the survival of their young. But as in animal behaviors, no matter how different plant behaviors that fulfill these same priorities appear to us, these also represent the most energy-efficient way for that plant to achieve the maximum stability in that environment. Imagine you had to stand outside in one place with no reliable protection from the heat, cold, wind, rain, hail, snow, ice, and fire. Where would you want your brain function to occur? At the top of your body or in a more protected, temperature-regulated location underground? Would it make sense to concentrate all your brain function in a small, relatively soft lump inside a bony skull that a single blow could destroy? Or spread it out in a diffuse underground web of roots with mini brains at their tips, so that if your above self were damaged, you could grow a new one? Pardon the pun, but that seems like a no-brainer to me. Your new plant persona, with its dual above-ground and subterranean environments, also needs to sense what's going on in both. Whereas humans, dogs, and cats have complex structures to process visual, auditory, scent, taste, and tactile stimulation, plants use a molecular-based system to gain that information, plus at least 10 more kinds of sensory data from their environments. They also possess a circulatory system that functions in ways similar to those in humans and other animals. Unlike most humans, plants know how to communicate with animals as well as other plants. Plants need to communicate with animals because those animals transport seed and pollen and ensure the survival of the plant species, sometimes at great distances away. They need to get messages to other plants to warn them of impending danger. And like humans and other animals, plants also recognize and favor their own kin. But in addition to the ability of plants to accomplish the same goals as sentient animals, they routinely pull off a biochemical engineering feat that would earn humans who did likewise enough Nobel and other academic prizes to sink a battleship. Plants can take energy from the sun and combine it with carbon dioxide and water to produce energy and release oxygen. So in the process of feeding themselves, they remove a substance, carbon, that's wreaking havoc with our climate and air quality, and they give us oxygen in return. All without the aid of multi-billion dollar facilities and apparatus that require tremendous amounts of energy to build and sustain, and often more to dismantle when they wear out. No wonder nature bathing, also known as taking a walk in the woods, has attracted a following. No wonder conservationists decry deforestation worldwide. What good does it do us to have more food to eat if we and other animals lack the oxygen to breathe? So don't be an animal lover speciesist and deny sentience to the largest population of living beings on the planet. To do so isn't just to deny a growing body of science proving otherwise. It's also self-destructive.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.